Hi everyone, I'm Sarah Higgins, Art Papers Executive and Artistic Director. Art Papers expands the dialogue around contemporary art and culture by exploring the ways they affect and reflect human experience. You can find a rich archive of interviews, reviews, feature essays, artist projects, and more on artpapers.org. Welcome to this month's episode of Echoes, a monthly series where we spotlight our community of writers and artists who've been central to Art Papers' creative and rigorous coverage over the years. This month, we're looking back to a conversation I had with our longtime editorial designer, Benjamin Critton. We discuss his 2018 redesign of Art Papers magazine, translating an idea into design, and MARTA, his extremely cool LA gallery. There's a link in the description if you'd like to support the work of Art Papers by making a donation or purchasing from our shop.
Hi, welcome to Art Papers Instagram Live. My name is Sarah Higgins, and I am the editor and artistic director here at Art Papers. I'm in the office, which is unusual. I haven't been in the office much for a while, but I am happy to welcome Benjamin Critton, our graphic designer who's based in LA, who is joining us now. Let's see, I'll add him in. Benjamin is joining us. Hello, everyone else that's joining us. I see people
so
popping
close.
Up.
So very close. Hold on, let me figure out a contraption for this. Oh,
hi.
My goodness.
Hi, Benjamin. Welcome.
Hello. How are you?
We came right into the close up.
Oh man, I got to figure out something. Hold on. I'm gonna do some wheeling and dealing while you're on the phone.
Okay. I'll continue to introduce you. So Benjamin Critton is joining us today. He is the graphic designer who began working with me. I first came on at Art Papers as the interim editor in 2018, and I kind of coerced him into doing one issue, and that kind of grew into what became a redesign of the look of Art Papers magazine. And it's morning for you. Morning.
Good morning.
And you're better. This is a better frame.
This is so much better. My goodness. Oh. Can you guys hear the music in the background? There's an MMA studio behind the garden here.
I can't hear
it.
But...
Okay. All right. Great. Great. Woo. It's profane, you know. So I didn't want to, you know. The music is very profane.
It sounds fine.
It's okay, good.
Yeah, I've lived near an MMA studio, and they had a thing where they would drag really huge pieces of metal behind them. At like 5 a.m.
Yeah.
Not a fan. Was not a fan of that.
Thanks so much for having me.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah.
I was just explaining while you were getting set up that I'd coerced you into doing one issue back in fall of 2018. This issue, Borders and Borders. And
I also learned that everything is backwards on this, you know. Everything. So we apologize for that in advance. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was a whole concept issue. You had to read in the mirror. Sorry.
We should do one of those.
I know.
I'm really glad to have a chance to talk to you because we've been meaning to do this for a while. And one of the things that about our kind of working together is that it was kind of, I think of it as being having been kind of unintentional. We didn't really set out to redesign Art Papers. We didn't really set out for you to become the designer. We just did one and it went so well and we had so much fun and I had fun. I feel like we had such a good rapport that it just grew into a partnership and a collaboration. And so one of the things that influenced that was kind of the concepts that we talked about when we were talking about borders and barriers. I wanted to kind of start there, although I have to give a shout out to our first project together.
That's true. Yeah, Gut Feelings. My goodness.
Right. And it's been a while, man.
It's been a good long while.
There has been some years that we have been working together and still have not met in person.
Yeah. And then the connection goes back to colleagues of yours from Bard, right?
Yeah. I kind of put when I was working. So, okay, for context, I was working on a catalog for an exhibition when I was a curator at the Zuckerman Museum of Art. And I kind of put a call out to friends and said, I'm looking for a graphic designer who does brilliant work, who can be a conceptual collaborator, and who I will be able to afford. And people were like, well, you can have two of those.
The infamous triangle of choice.
Right. But we did have plenty of time, at least.
Yeah.
And that grew into... not just the catalog, but the entire exhibition identity, which I feel like I was asking you to do something that was not something you'd done before. Can you, now that we're looking back and it's safely in the distance, do you want to talk a little bit about that experience?
Oh, sure. No, it was great. I think the more comprehensive kind of like any endeavor can be, the better, which is to say, you know, to have sort of an exhibition design agnostic of a publication design, it's always like kind of a bummer, right? Like sometimes you'll encounter a publication for a book that clearly kind of had where the design maybe had nothing to do with the exhibition design. Like maybe you saw this thing at, I don't know, the Whitney or something like this, and then you go and pick up the catalog and it's sort of like, oh, this doesn't have any kind of like relationship to the thing that I saw. So I think it's always super nice to be able to sort of harmonize those things. And so it was super logical in a way to sort of be holistic about it. And I thought it was a great one. I mean, it's always interesting to really design from afar. I know there were like fantasies of like hop in a flight to Atlanta, hop in a flight to Georgia from where I was at that time, which was like maybe early LA, or maybe even back in New York. No, it was in LA.
You were in LA then.
Yeah. You know, but I think also like that always presents a super interesting challenge and also sort of like a test of communication from which we came out, you know, on the right side. And I think that sort of like communication test, that like trial by fire, is sort of like probably what led us to be like, we should do this other thing too.
Yeah, we had to work through some challenges. I mean, I remember taking pictures of the walls that you were designing vinyl for, and then printing them out and then drawing the measurements on the printout and then scanning that and sending that to you. And we did some like video walkthroughs, but I mean, it's a sort of weird challenge to design something so tied to the architecture in a space.
Totally.
But anyway, that led to gut feeling.
Yeah. And I wish I had the catalog for that to show sort of like where that start. Oh, you do. Have, oh man.
I bought it. Of course, now I know that it's going to be backwards, but,
That's all right. The catalog was, the format was based on the average size of a stomach of a human, which is just a ludicrous thing to do. But it was great fun.
It was. And your concept for the design had a very sort of like pink for the stomach, the viscera, the intestines. And then there was a kind of fecal brown that was also very chocolatey.
And that was actually kind of like the beginning of my and our, when I use the first person inclusive, it generally means either it's going to mean you and I, or it's going to mean my partner Heidi and I. That was the sort of beginning of Heidi and my obsession with brown. And it still hasn't quit. We like, we can't get away from brown. Wow. Yeah. It's so wild looking back at it. That was 2016 or 17?
Well, I think we started working on it in 16, and then the exhibition was 17.
Cool.
So it was about a year that we worked on it, or maybe less, so it was like 8 months or something.
Yeah, it was a good chunk for sure.
It was a gestational amount of lead time.
Eric Benjamin says, "I love brown too." Eric was one of the contributors to the magazine. He did this great piece called "Walking Down the," and I'll destroy the Dutch word here, but "Kampingstraat," which was sort of like almost like a little walking essay throughout the whole catalog, which was super nice.
So what came to pass was that I joined Art Papers as interim editor at a moment when not only had the Victoria Camblin, the editor and artistic director, who had departed that I was stepping in for as interim, but also the graphic designer had departed at the same time. And so there was this kind of vacuum of what to do with all of this uncertainty. And so when I came in as interim, one of the first conversations I had with Saskia Benjamin, our executive director, was we got to find a graphic designer to do this first issue and quickly. And, you know, we had had such a good experience working together. It had at that point been about a year. And I was like, I know a guy that I know that I can work with. And that was so important. But just knowing that I would be able to say, this needs to be XYZ things, and that you would understand.
Yeah.
What talking about, you know. And,
yeah, and I think it's sort of like a case also for just like working with someone or some team of someone's over a long course of time, because there ends up being this sort of shared vernacular that only gets built on. It ends up becoming really effective from like a time standpoint, and even like in some cases for graphic designers who are watching, like a costing standpoint. You know what I mean? Where there's sort of like a shared vernacular that keeps on building, keeps on informing the next issue and the next thing and the next endeavor, even if they are separated by the entity for which they're being executed.
Yeah, and I think with us, some of those things that I know I came to the table with and that I want to put out there and then have you kind of respond to them.
Sure.
Because I know that this is kind of what I came with front-loaded.
Cool.
A commitment to legibility. It was very important to me that, and always is very important to me, that a person can pick up a publication and be able to understand what they're holding. Like, is this an exhibition catalog? Is this a periodical? Is this a zine? Is this a book? And if it is a book, what kind of book is it? You know? And I found myself often kind of turned off by moments of graphic design where the design becomes so dominant that you don't even
know. That's right. We chatted about that super, super early on, yeah.
Yeah, that it needed to be content responsive and above all legible. And I know that that's what that means to me might not be what it means to you. And so I want to just throw that out as a prompt, like for you to, like, what were you hearing when I was saying that, and how did you internalize that into the decision making?
Sure. I think just like... deferring in a way to the content, at the very least, like making sure that that one is responding to the content, but also the content is going to be so varied across even across a single issue, whether that's thematically or just kind of piece by piece, that I think I come from a design background that sometimes, because of the nascency or the sort of like early there's a sort of like quality, and maybe it just has maybe it's coinciding simply with sort of being a young practitioner at that time, sort of like fresh out of grad school. This was 2012, in which some of the entities that you're working for, there's really not a lot of kind of like meat on the bones. Like sometimes it's sort of like a great idea and it's great emotion, but there's actually not a lot of content. And so sometimes early on in my graphic design career, I'd often be sort of tasked with almost like building that up or, you know, and it sounds whatever it sounds like at this point, but it's almost like we had got this, like this little essay and this little endeavor, and it's genuine and it's heartfelt and it's meaningful, but you know, but we don't have a tremendous amount of content. Can you make this feel as important as we feel it is, right? And I'm speaking now as the sort of commissioners or clients. And so often it would be sort of making graphic design do a lot of the heavy lifting, or to get that thing in front of someone's eyes in order to then digest, you know, what a smaller portion of content or something like this, but having a little bit of that presence, right, and a little bit of that, like, not jazz hands, so to speak, but initial kind of presence. Yeah, but yeah, a little bit, yeah. So to be really forward in making certain graphic design gestures. And I feel like over the course of my whatever kind of 8 to 10 years as a practitioner of graphic design, that has changed as it naturally does because, you know, you're working with people who are a little bit further along in their endeavors, and they potentially have the resources to make that content vast and meaningful and not just meaningful. And also, you know, what happens is you start to be tasked with containerizing sort of a more diverse set of things, and especially when it comes to artworks, there has to be sort of a delicacy to what happens around them. So you're sort of like, for a moment, you're being like, here they are, and then you're stepping back. So it's like maybe like setting up a volley or something. I'm really not even really into sports metaphors, but a little bit like that, where you're sort of like, here, and then I'll step back. So I think Art Papers was that feedback from you that things needed to be legible, they needed to be sort of they couldn't be too sort of self-important or self-referential, even they couldn't sort of they couldn't assume like a certain knowledge about the world in which the magazine happens to exist, which is the sort of like vast scare quotes art world. And your idea that like sort of any reader could be able to pick this thing up and digest it, I think was taken super to heart. In which you know, I sort of looked at you know, kind of classics like Art Form and Art in America, and their, you know, I think their level of sort of deference to the content is sort of one step even further removed than Art Papers, but this idea of just having something super legible, super straightforward, super supportive of the art, I think has been rad and has been sort of like perfected over and over. So each issue gets almost even a little bit better at sort of lifting the piece up where it needs to and then backing off where it needs to sort of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we definitely come with a lot of content. More content really than can fit in the page length that we have at our disposal. So, you know, we talk often about kind of creating an image buffet for you, and we often have, you know, a page map where we're really trying to figure out like how to fit it all more so than how to like expand it to fill the
no yeah and that's also an amazing thing. Sometimes like those projects of yours that I was mentioning, you really have to be like, all right, like let's stretch this into 48 pages, you know what I mean? And that's never the case with Art Papers. It's more like we've got to edit something out, or you know, or we need to make this particular piece rely more on the text than on the images, for example, which has always been an interesting challenge.
About the image choices.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm assuming that many of the people who are watching us right now or who will watch this later are somewhat familiar with Art Papers, the print publication.
Right.
So we also publish online really actively on artpapers.org. And so, you know, the physical magazine isn't the way that some people encounter our content. But
right.
I'm going to do a little, like a quickie. So I have, this is Borders and Barriers.
Fanning, yeah.
Yeah. The first one that you designed for us. And I'm going to come back to this because I want to tell a story of both of us learning.
Sure.
Of course.
Yeah. Oh my God, the fluorescence is of course.
Yeah. But then this was the second one. This was the Energy Structures issue, spring, summer 2019. And then you did fall 2019, Strategies of Response.
I'll hold up the next one.
Have ads on the back, and some of them have back covers. Oh, yeah, there's Globalism.
This is Globalism's. With a beautiful back cover as well.
Yeah, whenever we don't have a back cover ad, we get to do this nice front back thing. And then spring 2020.
This is a very prescient art of the new civil rights era.
Right, with Shayna McCoy on the cover, and then the current issue that's out now, summer 2020, and also with a back cover. With Lily McElroy on the cover. And so these have a kind of shared logic. They don't have a template. You know, the cover does the elements, you move them around, they're kind of responsive to what the image is. But there's a consistency and an identity that I would say that, like, our past graphic design for many years had been completely content responsive. Every issue looked different. And then we had special guest edited issues that, you know, interspersed throughout. I know you have an LA crowd. And so this was Jennifer Bonner guest edited an issue on pools. The theme was pools.
Totally.
Very LA based. And was really, well, and it had guest designers, April Grayman and Angela Yu. But so that one kind of really deviated. It has a little bit of a gut feelings shape in it.
Totally, yeah, the format, absolutely.
But yeah, and so, like, and then another issue from that era, you know, has this kind of look. And so I know that we didn't really do a very sort of intentional redesign of the magazine, but ultimately happened. So can you talk a little bit about taking this one-off Borders and Barriers experience and then thinking of how to translate it into an iterative template for a periodical publication?
Of course. Yeah, I mean, like a lot of the projects that I work on, it often, Art Papers is so sort of devoted to commissioning meaningful writing, and language is so much a component of it. Even in a magazine about art and artworks, I'd argue that sort of the written and the visual is pretty much like sort of right around 50-50 in terms of sort of devotion to the image versus devotion to the text. So like in a lot of things that I work on, it sort of started with typography. And the one thing that we knew sort of couldn't change, wouldn't change, and didn't need to change, shouldn't change, was the masthead, the sort of Art Papers logo type, which had been around, I think, since like the early 90s or mid 90s, something that had sort of been something that was stabilized throughout a lot of the different iterations of the magazine. And so that was sort of the jumping off point, and also sort of attempting to capture that legibility and attempting to sort of look at the lineage of the typeface and see what other things existed that that could make a direct reference to that thing, but do the heavy lifting of you know, carrying 5,000 word essays in, you know, 8 or 10 point type. And so sort of looking at the lineage of that typeface, we found just like kind of an old school, like, workhorse grotesque called Monotype Grotesque, which is sort of thought of this, like, it's obviously a digital redrawing of a very early American grotesque typeface. And I thought it was right to be using kind of an American typeface as opposed to a Dutch or European one or something like this, because Art Papers is so specifically kind of American. And so that's kind of where it started, is just trying to find something that would really do a solid throughout. So there's really just, with a couple little exceptions and breaking of our own sort of internal rules, there's really just about three fonts used throughout the whole publication, just used at different sizes to kind of achieve different effects. And what we sort of reuse the typeface for the Art Papers masthead as headlines throughout. Trying to think of like a good, this is like from, so that's essentially like our masthead typeface, blown up even a little bit more. So the masthead typeface sort of shrinks and grows based on kind of content and meaning. And then, we use our monotype grotesque, Roman and italic, and that's like kind of it. And that dictated sort of so much of the direction, sort of making a decision early on to keep the typography palette like pretty, pretty narrow, pretty slim, also pretty like translatable. If I was going to hand off this template to a junior designer, or so, you know, if Art Papers had to sort of bring the design in house or something like this, that thing would work, and that the rules would not be sort of so vast. There'd be sort of just a couple, stylistic rules that hopefully someone could pick up on pretty easily. And those styles are then sort of carried over into the digital design space. You have sort of paragraph styles and character styles that are really easily translatable. In the first one, we were sort of thinking specifically about the theme as it related to the layout and the grid and things like this. And so with Borders and Barriers, we really like pushed the edges of the borders in a way, and got like pretty kind of, I don't know, Dutch for lack of a better word, with sort of getting all of the content really close to the edge of the page. And part of that was also...
see here, it really goes right.
Right down to the bottom, yeah.
Right
to the edge. And it was, I mean, you know, yeah, it's a... it was tough to make sure that that would come out over the course of the essentially the print and production process. But what was I going to say? That was a long way of saying we really wanted to like figure out how to make the best of this format. So Sarah and I sort of decided early on, like instead of getting funky and trying to kind of reformat the thing each time, like let's think about the art paper subscriber in a way, or the person who picks up the magazine really regularly, and think about that archive a little bit, the actual physical archive on a shelf or in a library, and try to make consistent this format. So we decided on a format that was sort of like the most common format that had been used previously, and then we really tried to figure out how to kind of like really get as much content into that format as we could, and we pulled back a little bit after Borders and Barriers. But with Borders and Barriers, we really sort of like, I'm always into like a kind of dumb, literal, not a graphic design joke, but a little bit where you're sort of like responding to something in a really kind of one-to-one lingual way. I'm like, borders, great. Let's talk about margins. And I think that comes from like early graphic design exercises. I was thinking really specifically with in relation to this one, trying to trace back. I saw Zach Jensen was on the feed. I'm not sure if he's still here, but... goes back to a brief that was given to us in grad school by Carl Martins, who gives these really great one-word briefs. And one of them was, ours was domain, right? So it's sort of like, great, you can express this in so many different ways. You know, it can be about web domains or, you know, state domains and things like this. They're these words that are open enough to really, like, allow expression in. And I think the one for the class prior to us was borders. And just like the sort of, you know, broad interpretations of that word. Oh, there it is.
Yeah. Hi, Zach.
And I think that was sort of coming to mind also is like, what are all the different ways that we can sort of talk about borders and barriers, and what are the, again, you know, a viewer or a reader is not gonna acknowledge those, but they might feel those, and that to me is super, super important. Even if that has to do with sort of like unease of, you know, the text being super close to the edge of the page, I feel like that's potentially a really rewarding sort of design result, potentially.
Yeah, and we started with borders and barriers, and I feel like we had a lot of conversations about that, what you're describing, you know, the how this was going to be kind of, you know, the concepts without being reductive could be sort of literalized in the design. But after that, we kind of just decided to riff on what you had built with borders.
Yeah.
And I feel like along the way, some things we've kept and you've kind of introduced new things as we've, you know, gone through different issues.
Yeah.
But one of the things we introduced with borders was what was initially an ink swap.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Which is how we have this very like juicy neon.
Totally.
And this like very eye popping. Like I don't even think that the screen, like the phone.
No, the RGB is not gonna. It's not gonna capture hang out with it.
It's a really glowing,
whoa,
like luminescent, pink and yellow, just attack on the eyes.
Yeah.
In a really compelling way. But we learned in that experience that doing a swap was a little bit too chaotic.
Just, yeah, risky. You know, I think, I mean, what's amazing about art papers is that with respect to the artworks, we know, for example, that like the artworks exist beyond this space. And so, you know, for Borders and Barriers, we wanted to, well, I guess like we've relearned the reverence for the image in issues after this one. But even with that one, there was a nice sort of like, we know that the painting doesn't look like this. I don't know. It was like, even though it ended up becoming kind of an exercise and like, sort of like, we should correct that for next time. It was still refreshing to be, you know, I don't know, to acknowledge the fact that like, these are not the paintings. These are representations of the works. And I feel like Art Papers does that so well, and even in its writing, by being like, by knowing that like, just showing an image is not the same as experiencing that artwork in real life, and it never can be. And no magazine is gonna like express or represent that painting or that work or that sculpture one to one. And so, anyways, that was a long way. With the color thing was like sort of this way of getting that, but I feel like. There's a really regular acknowledgement of that inability, right? And then you working into that by being like, this is a publication about the art. This is not the art.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, the artist projects that existed in it, all in a funny way, you know, came around to the way that they swap affected the work and made the work's color a little bit different. You know, by kind of getting interested in the way that it created this sort of in situ, that's an artist project by Aaron Gimmel, that the fragment, the form that you see, those are printed like with a printmaking process. They're the plexiglass panels that you often see in New York on the barriers built around construction sites, and then they'll cut little viewing windows, and those are the viewing, the actual plexiglass viewing window cover of those borders.
And they were initially printed in like a very like the red of my scarf, for example.
Yeah, they were red or red, and then they became this kind of glowing caution orange. And
totally, and Aaron, I feel like, was super open to it.
He was. I gave him a very nervous phone call about it, and he was actually like, no, actually, that's interesting. Like, I think he was worried at first, and then he kind of was oh, no, that's cool. Like, that actually is cool. So,
but what's interesting about the color swap is that led us to essentially, like, choosing a hero color for each issue moving forward and finding a way to fit that into the budget, actually, which was, like, you know, just to speak frankly, like, you know, the budgets are, like, they are what they are. They're pretty non-moving, and it's also been really interesting to work into those. It's like, we want to do this special thing for this issue, so we're losing four pages and we need to like make up for that editorially, you know, or whatever. I think that is, I don't know, it's no fun to like have no limits, you know.
It's worth noting that Art Papers is the longest running nonprofit arts and culture magazine in the U.S. We've been around since the late 70s, since 76, 77.
And it's so badass, and it deserves like such more of a platform even than it has.
Right, but we're a small operation, you know, like our budgets are unmoving because we are largely like grant and donor funded. And so, you know, it's not extravagant, and any decision that we make has to be really intentional. It has to be something that we give a lot of thought to, and we have to balance that with what we might lose in making that decision. And so, so it is a balancing act for sure. But
from the first issue would have been like, don't sub the color, just add the color.
Just add the color. Lesson learned, you know.
For all you designers looking to just sub a little innocent fluorescent yellow, boy howdy, you got another thing coming.
Changes everything.
It really does.
Well, so I have, let me check the time. Okay, we're doing okay. I have some other questions, and I want to make sure that you know, we're talking about Art Papers, but I also want to hear a little bit more about what you have going on.
Sure.
And if anyone's ever received an email from you, they will see that at the bottom of that email, you have a kind of stack of signatures. You have a gallery, you have some publication things, you have Colophon Foundry, you have, like, you're involved with a lot of different projects.
Yeah.
And I kind of wanted, I know a little bit about some of them and more about others, but can you kind of give the breakdown of like what all of these modes of working that you're into?
Yeah. I'm trying to think of kind of the, without getting too narrative oriented, trying to think of like how this came to be. I feel like, I do owe a lot of it to graduate school, and I don't know. Whatever. It's just true. I went to the graduate school of graphic design at Yale. But in that program, you're really kind of like put right up alongside these kind of more historical and hallowed art traditions. So that's painting, printmaking, sculpture, photography. And photography has, you know, over the years come to involve filmmaking and video and things like this as well. And you're tossed in there, and like the structure of the school would sort of say like graphic design is on par with these things. And you know, in the back of your head, there's this inevitable like inferiority complex, because you're like, graphic design is historically this service-based thing. It, you know, it's supposed to be in service of images and in service of goods and products and things like this. There's this sort of complex early on that at least I developed, that was sort of like, someone is asking a question that I don't understand. I think it led to this like real diversity of interest, and like really not, I mean, also the amazing thing about graphic design and the sort of hokey thing about design container for anything, right? For any discipline or any kind of output, it can act as a sort of guide or set of infrastructure to kind of like focus that stuff. I don't know. I think that being sort of tied down to a single discipline feels disingenuous in a way. There's a studio that we worked with recently for a show in the gallery here, which I'll talk about in a second, called We Should Do It All. They're an amazing New York-based, Brooklyn-based studio. And the name is sort of like, I don't know, I find it so refreshing. They're saying like, we should do it all, you know what I mean? Like as communicators, as like builders of form and a story and a narrative, you know, like why ought we limit ourselves to one discipline, or certainly like, you know, there's still experts, right? Like, you know, I'm not saying that I can do X or Y thing as good as someone else, but that's like why collaboration exists. And I guess kind of coming off of that, there was an early interest in kind of publishing and self-publishing, and just a love for books and a love for printed things, and that led to sort of involvement in book fairs. My love of graphic design originally emanated from typography, and so typography, I'm still able to express that in a sort of like a commercial sense by working with Colophon, who's a type foundry based in London, and I'm able to, when time allows, draw a type and publish it through them. So that sort of like satisfies some of my language interests when I can't like, you know, maybe read as much as I want to. I still like find satisfaction just engaging with language in typographic form. And then the book stuff also led to, you know, being involved in book fairs and things like that. So when it was back in New York, it was kind of some of the Printed Matter fairs. And I worked at Printed Matter, they were a client of mine for a good long while. And now here in LA, it's Acid Free, which is a book fair that was started just about 2 years ago. We host it Plum and Poe each year, this year being an exception because this year is weird. And then when my partner and I moved to LA, actually, we found ourselves with a garage, which was like such this novelty. And you like hear these kind of like dumb American like stories about like Apple started in a garage, IBM was started in a garage. But it turns out a garage is this really interesting flex space where you can do a lot of stuff that you couldn't do when you didn't have that space. So coming from New York and a really kind of limited square footage, Heidi and I started making furniture, really kind of for ourselves at first, and we gave that the umbrella name of Norma, to kind of capture kind of like a Venn diagram of our practices. So she comes from kind of furniture and interiors, and I come from graphic design. And actually, coincidentally, our first expression of that was this a series of prints called Pools, which we ended up having a conversation with some of the colleagues from the Pools issue of Art Papers. I don't think we've ever talked about, but we had this funny little like a round table at a local shop here because they asked us to be, because they were like, you made prints of Pools. And we were like, what's this Art Papers, bah? Literally, and I had never connected that until you brought back up that that LA-centric issue of Art Papers, which is just so wild and synchronicitous and great. And really, really kind of organically from Norma, Norma became, you know, just because of his interest in objects, started kind of curating these little mini shows, often kind of based around a typology. So one year at the LA Art Book Fair, we did a show of bookends, and we invited sort of 20 or 25 contemporary artists and designers to design bookends. Henry did one of them. I'm seeing him here. And that was sort of like our first curatorial endeavor. It was hyper satisfying and so nice to sort of, kind of be voyeurs into these practices. It really gets you like a lot closer to the artist and to the designer. You sort of like, at that point we weren't doing studio visits explicitly, but like that's what they ended up kind of becoming over time. And then that brought me back to grad school again, like just being able to sort of like go and hang out with the artists in their space and in their sort of like natural habitat, so to speak, and how rewarding that is, and how much closer you can get to like kind of capturing the essence of someone's output and practice by understanding the space and the objects around them. And that's kind of where the interest came from to start actually curating shows in a more sincere endeavor or under kind of like a specific rubric. So the space that we occupy here on Sunset, and I can walk you through in a minute if you want, but we early on we sort of started sharing the space with a couple of really talented LA architects. Anyways, we sort of adopted also this storefront space. There was a facade to the space, and when the architects left, they asked us if we wanted to take a release, and we said yes, and there was this facade in this sort of, for lack of a better word, rapidly gentrifying neighborhood that we sort of started feeling icky about, like just treating as like a workspace and kind of like having this locked door all the time. We sort of married that thing that we always wanted to do, which was have kind of some sort of forward project or exhibition space, with kind of the responsibility in a way, I don't know, maybe that's an icky word, but of this facade, of this like forward facing facade on Sunset Boulevard. And and opened up Marta just about 1 year ago. And so Marta, named like Norma, sort of, there are these names that come from these rad ladies out in the desert, actually, in the high desert, sort of around 29 Palms and Joshua Tree. But generally they're the names of these kind of homesteaders, often like widows and folks who sort of moved away from LA to kind of like start lives on their own. And so the metaphor of that became really strong, just these kind of like rad two syllable strong ladies names. So Norma and Marta. So yeah, and Marta just had its sort of fifth show. And that's sort of a true co-curatorial collaboration with Heidi, my partner, where we're sort of identifying practices that are kind of right on the line of art and design. So artists who are kind of toying with functionality as being like a new part of their work, or utility as being a new part of their work, and then designers who are maybe sort of like stepping away from that utility or stepping away from that functionality. So trying to sort of capture practices in this transition moment where less straddling line of art and design and more like just tiptoeing it in a way that's hopefully kind of productively disorienting. So those are all the endeavors.
Those are a lot of endeavors.
They shift and they move, you know, like acid free is the kind of thing, for example, where like that might start ramping up again as we're like considering kind of alternatives for what an art book fair could and should be in the coming year. And so that's, you know, things ebb and flow, and even the pacing of of exhibitions and things like that. You know, they ramp up and they move down. So it's kind of just like, kind of just managing kind of deadlines like anything else in a way. They happen to sort of have, knock on wood, kind of like more expressions when they actually kind of come to life, which is great and super rewarding.
Yeah. Well, we have a question.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry if we've missed questions before. Things have been kind of going by, and then I've also been trying to look at my like cheat sheet down here.
How would you recommend designers step out of the service-based mindset and approach design more like a multidisciplinary designer / artist without grad school? I can't see who that came from. The vigorous one.
Vigorous one.
It's a good question. I feel like it has to start with non-commissioned works and maybe just like collaborative works. Doing a couple kind of like, you could even call it like kind of pro bono or just like truly collaborative endeavors with people. I mean, if we think of like the actual service, like hierarchy, right? It's like, it assumes a hierarchy. It assumes someone commissioning someone. And as soon as that like exchange of payment is enacted, sometimes clients feel like they literally, that you are in their service, right? And happily, this is not the case with Art Papers, but certain clients like that. no, but seriously, this is not, it truly is like more of a collaboration. But if we use that word, which is a hokey word sort of, but nevertheless an appropriate one, right? So it's like there's no money exchanged and we can have a collaborative sort of design task where you are working with someone else to maybe containerize their work or frame their work or put something together. It doesn't need to be an artist's work necessarily. Sometimes the result of that is then being hired to do that kind of work. And I hate to be like, you got to make the work you want to get. Cause it's sort of in graphic design, it's like a trope. But it works in some ways, right? So if you create a few projects that are truly non-hierarchical in their structure, then sometimes you can solicit work that is in fact paid and compensated appropriately. And the expectation is that it's a collaborative thing and not a hierarchical one, based on you know you proving the merit of the work that you've made prior in these truly collaborative settings. Maybe that's a really long-winded way. That's maybe not even what you're asking, but I think grad school doesn't matter to any of it. It's just about putting yourself in close proximity to the kind of people whose practices you might like and want to work alongside of.
Yeah,
and maybe that's art, but maybe that's something else.
Yeah, to me that just touches on the thing about, I mean, I'm also very much in many ways a product of the graduate program that I went to.
Sure.
Which is a CCS at Bard. So it was a very kind of contemporary art curatorial kind of theoretical type of education. And, you know, and that makes you a certain kind of person from the schooling you get, but it also puts you in a particular kind of community. And the thing about grad school that I really think I gained the most from was the community. It was the people that I was brought into proximity and dialogue with. And you know, it can be hard to make that, you know, on your own, but you can make it on your own you can create that, especially, I mean, now more than ever, now that we're all just used to physical proximity, not really being.
Yeah. It's not even like a knock on the door thing anymore, which can be probably, I haven't even thought about that, but yeah, potentially has even more of, you know, it's a DM or it's a direct message over Instagram or something like this to sort of like be adjacent to someone whose practice or output you're interested in. And obviously that knock on the door doesn't mean you will collaborate, but it means you could potentially sort of get closer to that point of collusion.
Yeah, I like that. One of the silver linings of pandemic life for me has been that there's been this leveling of access. The people that live across town are no more available to me than the people who live across
Interesting.
The state that live in another country. I mean, time's permitting. You know, the way I interact with my friends in New York or in London, this is the same interaction that I'm having with people who live down the road.
Down the street. You know? Yeah, that's super interesting.
And so we're, in a funny way, I've reconnected with people in a way that feels less separated in this moment where it is what, you know, you're just, this is how we communicate now. Like, I mean, much in the same way that you and I have never actually been in the same city at the same
which
time.
Is bonkers. Totally.
After years of collaboration, if anything, we are proof that you don't need grad school to put you in a room with people. You can just kind of follow your nose and find people that you vibe with.
This is the most sustained face-to-face conversation I think we've ever had, which is crazy, which is bonkers. Yeah.
Well, so we have 10 minutes.
Cool, yeah.
If folks have questions, we could try to take a question. Just go in and put it in the comment thing if you have a question that you want us to try to tackle.
Okay, thank you, the biggest one. We weren't sure if we answered your question. That's great.
Yeah, I hope we touched on that. But maybe while folks are thinking and or typing or potentially having no questions at all.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you wanna walk us through quickly?
Sure, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I'm happy to.
And let me walk.
Yeah.
Tell us about the show.
Oh, sure. Well, you'll see sort of so did you not hear the music that whole time?
No.
Oh, wow, there's like some really intense techno happening. I'll flip the camera around so you guys can. So you're seeing sort of back of house here. I'm featuring some works from previous shows. Actually, it's a sculpture by Klaas Ernflo, sculpture by Peter Harkowick, sconce by Alex Reed. There's actually a painting I'm working on, but let's not talk about that.
Wait. No, yeah. I don't like you.
Some stools from a previous show, as well as a really beautiful hanging textile artwork from Klaas Ernflo. He calls these textile paintings. This is sort of like our library, so to speak. So obviously the sort of like obsession with printed matter is, it's real. the TDC annuals. So yeah, it sort of spans from graphic design into product design and interiors and architecture. This is sort of where we work. It's Heidi's sort of station and mine, with overflowing poster tubes. these are some works by Peter Shire, Toilet Seats. We're really, really happy to have these on behalf of the show, hanging out here in back of house. And two works of his from 2007.
Okay, we've got some questions.
Do
you want to tackle the questions while?
Yes, I'll just show people around and then I'll answer the questions simultaneously.
Okay, quick answers. Any advice for folks starting from scratch in arts publishing in terms of how to define that visual identity? Feels like the stakes are so much higher for an arts pub. Maybe this one's directed at me. I can take this one if you want.
Sure.
While you're throwing up toilet paper hangers. Maybe get right in there. Let's see some close-ups while I talk. I think that the advice I would give is make the identity of the publication feel like it's communicating the core of what you want to say about art, about culture, about design. You know, like it's, and don't worry too much about it looking like anything else or not looking like anything else. I think it's really just about finding the thing that thrills you and makes you feel inspired to engage with it. Because for me, if I feel super inspired to engage with the thing that I'm making just by my own delight in how it looks, then I know I'll bring a kind of enthusiasm to it and a commitment to it that I might not be able to muster on a rough day or a rough week as much. I always tell Benjamin that by the time the text and the content for each issue gets to him, I'm pretty over it. Like, I've read every single text 10, 15 times, fine tooth comb, the images, the captions, we've been through it all. I'm kind of ready to hand it off. And then Benjamin designs it and sends it back, and I'm more in love with that content all over again than ever before. And I think if you can find the visual identity that's going to make you feel that way, then you've found your thing. I don't know, Benjamin, does that seem like a fair answer?
I was like playing cinematographer over here. Totally. I think also maybe bringing back this idea of like deference is also really interesting. So like when you're designing for an arts publication, I do feel like the stakes are higher, and I understand that. But I also feel like maybe like like you still also have this like kind of obligation to hang back a little bit and make something kind of really elegant, but stand on its own, make it obviously compelling and interesting and autonomous, and but also keep in the back of the mind that like at the end of the day, especially if it's an arts publication, that it is sort of in service to the art. It is. It's not only sort of. It has to be in service to the art to some extent. At moments, it can be in service to itself and to the entity, but in the majority of the time, it needs to be in service of the art.
Yeah, rendering an artwork into nothing more than an illustration is a violence that you want to avoid.
Ooh, that was very well said.
Thanks. Okay, what designer's work do you recall noticing first, and how old were you?
Oh my gosh. I don't think I can answer that.
Or if you don't know their name, what do you remember what?
I'm trying to think. It's great. I'll just kind of hang out stationary for a minute.
I know what mine is.
It sounds hokey, but it was probably something that my dad was working on, because my dad was an architect. So and like an engineer. So I feel like it's got to have been something that he did, or my uncle was like a woodworker. And I feel like maybe it had something to do with like, I don't know, probably had something to do with friggin' dads. Cause like the dads, you know, what was yours going to be?
This is actually tied to my dad, although it came to me through my mom. My dad had a copy of the Whole Earth catalog.
Oh, amazing.
And also more importantly, a companion publication called Big Rock Candy Mountain, which was a resources for like hippie homeschooling.
That sounds amazing.
I was kind of obsessed with that as a kid, and it was remarkable. It was a remarkable.
That sounds really special. We didn't. I mean, probably like if I'm being honest, like National Geographic and things like this too.
I mean, totally. All the 80s. For me, it was the 80s. I'll speak for myself, old. So quickly, where is this space, Marta, that you're walking around? And then we may get cut off. We're at the very tail end.
And we may get cut off because my phone's about to die also. This space is, I'll turn around for a moment. This space is called Marta. It's on Sunset Boulevard in Los Angeles, in a neighborhood called Echo Park. The show that you're seeing is called... it's called Under Over, and it's a collaboration with a toilet paper company called Plant Paper, who we happen to share space with. And sort of through our interactions with Plant Paper, we came to realize how nefarious the toilet paper industry is, and we thought it would be really, really interesting to look at this really under-celebrated and under-loved piece of kind of everyday industrial or product design or whatever you want to call it. So we asked after pieces from about 50 different designers and artists. And this is the amazing, amazing, super diverse result.
Well, quickly, Benjamin Critton, editorial designer of Art Papers and doer of many other things. Where do you land, over or under?
Oh, it's over. We're thinking of just renaming the show to Over.
I'm over because, too. I'm a staunch over.
It turns out mostly everyone a bum swab show. So great.
Maybe
Edward,
you,
that's
like,
amazing.
Are the under people just afraid to say anything at this point? Like,
maybe,
do they feel
maybe they feel like bullied or something like that? Someone made a really good point. It's like, why would you ever do under? You can't see what you're doing. You know, like you have to like reach under there in a way. Over really
it.
Is the Zach Jensen, OMG over. So a lot of people are really emphatic.
I'll change it. If I'm in a bathroom and it's on under.
You'll do it? Oh, amazing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Amazing. I think people get really righteous about it. Peter Shire, so we post in our Perma stories like some of these interviews with the artists, and Peter has this really interesting observation about people who are really staunchly under or over. Like he's like, it's kind of like religion. Like you don't even really know why it's there, but like, but people are like really dogmatic about it.
I mean, I wonder if it's a disciplinary space thing too. Like if visual art people are staunchly over, but maybe like science and math people are very under.
Does the patent really say
we
over
may
the
never
next
know
gen?
This audience.
Yeah, right. The patent on file says over, as Zach Jensen says. Anyways, so certain of them are. There are certain pieces. This is Max Endrich, for example, who is designed to be under. So you have this sort of beautiful lip, this sort of like Judd-like thing. And then certain ones are coming kind of perpendicular off the wall, and they actually kind of don't necessarily mandate as under or over because they're not parallel to the wall. So this one can go kind of left or right. Same with this by History of Frogs. This is Klaas Ehrenfloh's work, who we also showed the textile piece from the back. We showed a show of work of his called Anorak early last year. The work is super diverse. You can see it on Marta's website, marta.la, and also marta.losangeles is the Instagram as well.
Well, and I have to plug very quickly here at the end that Art Papers is a quarterly publication that focuses on visual art and culture. Designed by Benjamin Critton, and it is available for single issue purchase or subscription on artpapers.org. And if you subscribe now, you will be in time for the fall issue, which is going to have a very special color, hero color, that I believe is going to be metallic. So.
Which we start work on imminently.
Imminently, indeed.
Which is really
super
exciting.
Immediately after this.
I can't wait. thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you for doing this.
Yeah, of course. And obviously anyone who's watching, feel free to follow up with questions either to Sarah directly at Art Papers, which is literally at Art Papers, or to myself, which is at Benjamin Critton.
Yeah, you can even hit me most directly with at Pistachio Cake, which is my personal. I'm not always the person who's inside at Art Paper. It'll make it to me either way. Thank you so much, Benjamin.
Pleasure.
Pleasure as always.
Talk soon, yeah? Thank you guys, anyone who joined. It's been great.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.